Okay, here it is, almost 3 o'clock. It's Wednesday on Juno afternoon. This is Ann Fuller. We're going to learn about this week's JWAC UAS Forum on Canada. Shava Lee will be here to highlight Saturday's pet festival called Woofstock. Stacy Paulson will discuss events going on at the Nugget Mall, and we'll talk with Mary Lou Spartz about Saturday's Reader's Theatre production, The Real Story of the Sinking of the Princess Sophia. Tonight's weather, increasing low clouds late, areas of fog late, and light winds.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada is in a crisis when it comes to its Indigenous people. That's the assessment of a special United Nations investigator. He wrapped up his tour of Canada this week, looking into the plight of First Nations. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
James and I have spent the past 9 days meeting with Native leaders, government officials, and First Nations people in 6 provinces. Anaya is a professor of human rights law at the University of Arizona. He is also the UN's Special Rapporteur for Indigenous Rights. Anaya says since the UN's last visit to Canada nearly 10 years ago, there has been some progress, but the government still needs to do far more about the social ills facing Native people.
Government Aboriginal people agree that education is a key issue that needs to be addressed. Reconciliation needs to happen. There's agreement that the situation of murdered and Aboriginal women needs to be addressed. That's the starting point. There's agreement on this, and what's being discussed is what is the best path forward. And what I'm saying, that path forward has to be defined with participation of Aboriginal peoples concerned. And if that doesn't happen, the path forward is going to be a rocky one.
Anaya says Canada faces a crisis with the situation of its First Nations. The economic gap between Natives and non-Natives has not narrowed. Treaty and land claims remain unresolved. And there are high levels of distrust among Native people towards government. Anaya also urged Ottawa to set up a national inquiry into the issue of missing and murdered women, something the government has been reluctant to do. Anaya's final report will be delivered to the United Nations Human Rights Commission later this year. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
An Alaska Native man has filed to run for lieutenant governor. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, he resigned as the state's deputy commissioner of fish and game to pursue politics.
Gwich'in Athabascan Craig Fleener announced his candidacy for lieutenant governor, surrounded by a family whose roots are in the village of Fort Yukon. Wearing a traditional beaded moosehide vest, Fleener presented a diverse portrait of himself.
I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I'm an Alaska Guardsman. I'm a biologist. I'm a firefighter. I'm a fur buyer. I'm an aircraft mechanic. And I'm even a janitor.
Fleener, who's running as an independent, struck familiar political themes of bringing people together and bridging the urban-rural divide. Fleener said he knows the challenge of managing Alaska's fish and game in a state where everyone is entitled equal access and Alaska Natives fight for a subsistence priority.
I'm Alaska Native, so I'm going to be talking with Alaska Natives about what's important to them. But we're going to try to take a look at this as an entire package. Subsistence is important for a lot of people around Alaska, and so we're going to have to pull everyone together to talk about solutions.
Fleener is teaming with independent gubernatorial candidate Bill Walker. They each have to collect 3,000 signatures to get their names on the 2014 ballot. For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
The Associated Press reports Byron Malott, who's Alaska Native, is running for governor of Alaska. He launched his campaign as a Democratic candidate Tuesday. Malott has served in various leadership roles, including president of the Alaska Federation of Natives and chairman of Sea Alaska Corporation. Meanwhile, Native people across Alaska are preparing to gather next week in Fairbanks. The First Alaskans Institute's Elders and Youth Conference kicks off Monday, followed by the Alaska Federation of Natives Annual Convention Wednesday through Saturday. Both gatherings focus on issues facing Native communities. Tune in to National Native News for coverage of both events. In October 2005, 2 Connecticut tribes were denied federal recognition status. The Eastern Pequot and Skaticook tribes received the decisions from the Interior Department. There are currently 2 tribes in the state that are federally recognized. Leaders of the Eastern Pequot, Skaticook, and Golden Hill Pigasset Nations recently said in a news report they're eyeing proposed changes to the federal recognition process, which may help them gain the status. the Bureau of Indian Affairs is considering reforms. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, here's Juno Afternoon, and we're going to be talking about the Fall Forum. With me in the studio are Jim Clark and Rick Caulfield. So, Jim, can you tell us about JWAC and what the Fall Forum is?
Well, the Juno World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership organization that brings speakers from all over the world to talk about public issues in Juno. And we're pleased as we've done now several times, to work in collaboration with the University of Alaska Southeast to bring a forum on Canada, which was initially proposed by Chancellor John Pugh. And we have, I think, pulled together a very, very good program starting tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, in the Glacier View Room at UAS. William Morrison, who is a professor emeritus from University of Northern British Columbia, and that will extend through Saturday with panels all day Friday and Saturday, and I think it's going to be a very interesting, action-packed event, and really pleased to have been working with Rick Caulfield, the provost, who has just done a spectacular job in helping put this together.
Well, thank you. So this is an event, Rick, that's open to the public?
It's open to the public, and it's free, and we invite everyone in Juneau who's interested in relationships between the United States and Alaska and our Canadian neighbor to come out and hear the presentations. It starts tomorrow night, Thursday, at 7 o'clock, and I just want to say, too, that we really appreciate this partnership with the Juneau World Affairs Council. It's a great opportunity to learn about Canada. It's a great opportunity for our faculty and our staff to be involved, our students to be involved. So we're leading off with a session on a primer on Canada with Dr. Bill Morrison that Jim just mentioned, who is an emeritus professor from the University of Northern British Columbia. He actually lives near Vancouver now, but he's written 14 books over his career, 40 years in Canada as a historian. And so we're really excited to hear an overview about Canadian issues and relationships with Alaska starting tomorrow night. Again, it's free. It's at 7 o'clock in the Glacier View Room on the Juneau Auk Lake campus.
That's great. So that's William Morrison, and he has written extensively on the Mounties as well as the Princess Sophia.
That's right.
So that's Thursday night, and then it goes on. Tell me about Friday.
We go into Friday, and something that a lot of people will be interested in, of course, is starting at 9 o'clock in the morning. Again, it's all free, and it's all on the UAS Auk Lake campus. A history of the Yukon, the land of the midnight sun. Again, Dr. Morrison's going to lead off that presentation from 9 until 9:50. And so we hope people will come. Again, this is in the Glacier View Room right by the turnaround and the flagpoles there at the Auk Lake campus. And then we go on to a presentation about climate change impacts and perspectives from Alaska and from Canada. And we're very excited, as you heard before, to have Stuart Elgee, who is a professor of environmental law and economics from the University of Ottawa, who I believe used to live here in Juneau and spent time in Alaska. And he'll be joining our UAS faculty members, Aaron Hood, Brian Vandernald, and Glenn Wright, speaking about climate change issues in Alaska and Canada. And that's going to be moderated by Sanjay Piari, a faculty member at UAS. And then we're going to go on and have a presentation, an exceptional one, I think. Jimmy Stotts, who is the president of the Inuit Circumpolar Conference for Alaska, will be talking about the relationship of the Canadian Arctic to the Alaskan Arctic. Canada being an Arctic nation, joining Alaska in that regard, we have a lot of issues and concerns in common, whether it's oil and gas development, whether it's First Nations, whether it's environmental protection issues, navigation in the Arctic Ocean, a whole host of issues. So I think having that indigenous perspective from the Inuit Circumpolar Conference will be very stimulating discussion.
We then have a renewable energy panel with Bob Grimm, who's the CEO of Alaska Power and Telephone, which works extensively in northern and southern, throughout southeast Alaska, in remote areas, providing hydroelectric power. Mark Taylor, who has been involved in energy issues in Skagway and British Columbia, talking about what is going on there. Those folks are going to be trucking LNG all the way from Alberta, so we're looking at some hydroelectric opportunities from Skagway into British Columbia. And David Pernanowski, who is the mayor of Terrace, British Columbia, who's going to be talking about all of the work that they're doing in Kitimat and Prince Rupert and opportunities to exchange renewable energy across from southeast Alaska, southern southeast Alaska to BC. In the afternoon, we have Larry Pursley, who I think everybody in southeast Alaska knows, who is the coordinator of the natural gas project for the feds, and George Hoberg, who is a professor of environmental policy from the University of British Columbia, talking about renewable energy issues. Then in the afternoon, Mark Taylor again, who's going to be talking about transportation infrastructure opportunities. And at that point, Rick is going to be again introducing Dr. Morrison.
Right. We have the Evening at Egan lecture, which most people in Juneau are familiar with, starting at 7 o'clock Friday evening, free lecture. And that talk by Dr. Morrison is about the tragedy, the Princess Sophia. And I think most of our listeners probably are aware of the tragic circumstances in 1918 when the Princess Sophia, the Canadian Pacific liner, went up on Vanderbilt Reef. To the loss of many, many lives. It's quite a dramatic tale. And he and his co-author, Ken Coates, wrote a book on the tragedy of the Princess Sophia. And he, in talking with him in the lead-up to this forum, he mentioned that, of course, 2018 will be the 100th anniversary of that tragic event. And so there's a lot of attention being given to that particular event, and also its impact on relations between Yukon and Canada and Alaska at that time. So it should be a very, very exciting and interesting talk from someone who wrote the book about the tragedy of the Princess Sophia. And the following morning, he's going to speak again on another book that he's written relating to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and Canadian sovereignty in the North, which will be a historical perspective on the role of the Mounties and the Klondike. And talking about Canadian sovereignty and how that concept and is manifesting itself in the 21st century with renewed interest in the Arctic shipping and things of that nature. So I think it'll be a really interesting, historically informed presentation about Canadian sovereignty.
And Rick is going to be hosting then what I think is going to be very interesting is an education panel.
Right. We have President Karen Barnes from Yukon College, who's going to be coming into Juneau, and she will be joining Chancellor John Pugh to talk about education issues, K-12 and higher education in the Yukon and here in Alaska. And she's also going to be signing an agreement with our university to renew and revitalize the longstanding relationships we've had between Yukon College and UAS. We've had students and faculty who've exchanged over the years, and actually quite a number of graduates from UAS who live in Whitehorse and in the Yukon. So we're excited to have her here.
So this is sounding like just quite a long list. The information's available on the UAS or the JWAC website, right?
That's correct.
And they're scheduled, it looks like, every hour or so. And people can come to the ones that appeal to them. But let's go on, because this was only Saturday at 10 a.m. is signing that agreement. So what else on Saturday?
Rick. Yeah, one other that we're very excited about. We have a presentation about First Nations and Alaska's Indigenous peoples. And our two presenters there are Tosh Southwick, who is the coordinator for First Nations initiatives at Yukon College. And she is going to be speaking about the development of First Nations relationships in Yukon and their significance to contemporary life in the territory. And then we have our Vice Chancellor for Enrollment Management, Joe Nelson, who's Tlingit, speaking about the situation here in Southeast Alaska. Joe is on the board of Sea Alaska Corporation and also on the board of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. So it'll be a good comparative perspective from Yukon and Alaska.
Continuing with the idea of comparisons, we have a natural resource panel in the afternoon looking at mining, timber, and fisheries. Clint Nauman was formerly the general manager at Greens Creek and is now the president of Alexco Corporation, which operates as a mining company in the Yukon, in the Keno Mining District, so who compare the two systems. We have Stuart Elgee, who, as Rick mentioned, used to live in Juneau, and George Hobart, both of whom are very familiar with timber issues. And they'll be talking about comparing timber issues in Southeast and in British Columbia. And then Jim Becker, who is on the Pacific Salmon Commission, will be talking about comparing some of the issues that we have with folks in British Columbia regarding regarding salmon. So that'll be an interesting panel. And then Rick's going to handle the wrap-up panel.
Then we're going to wrap it all up, 3:30 to 5 on Saturday afternoon. This is in the Egan Lecture Hall, again, all at the UAS Auk Lake campus, a panel discussion on how to improve Alaska and Western Canadian relations. So we'll have a number of our presenters, George Hoberg, Tosh Southwick, Clint Nauman, Mark Taylor, are going to join Randy Roaro from the governor's office, Bob Grimm, Karen Barnes from UConn College, all speaking about ways that we can continue to move forward on issues that are of mutual importance to Canada and Alaska, with a particular focus on the Yukon and on BC. So it should be really exciting. Again, all of these presentations are free. They're all at the UAS Auk Lake campus. The one caution is the roundabout construction that's going on there at Auk Bay is taking an extra couple of minutes, so people who are driving out may want to add an extra 5 or 10 minutes in coming out to these presentations.
So folks, look at the JuneauWorldAffairsCouncil.org website. They'll be able to see the schedule we just talked about. We invite everybody to come starting tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Glacier View Room at UAS.
And it's a great chance to look at Alaskan issues and then see the comparison with our neighbors over that imaginary line that we call an international boundary. It's a wonderful list. Thanks for going over the details there. And we'll send people to the website. JWAC has the fall forum, all the program information right there for you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 16th of October, 2013. It's the birthday of Noah Webster, Hartford, Connecticut, 1758, set out to write an American dictionary when he was 43. He wanted Americans to have their own language that wasn't based on the language of England. And also, the dictionary was to help Americans communicate with each other because regional dialects differed so drastically. It was Noah Webster who took the letter U out of English words like color and honor, and he spelled theater and center, E-R, rather than R-E, and introduced American words like squash, wigwam, opossum, presidential, Congress. It was on this day, 1846, the first successful demonstration of ether anesthesia at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. A surgeon named John Collins Warren amputated a tumor from the neck of a patient without him feeling any pain. Ether had often been used for years and years by college students for fun. They gave what they called ether frolics, parties where everybody got high on ether. It's the birthday of Oscar Wilde, born Dublin, 1854, who said all bad poetry springs from genuine feeling. and Eugene O'Neill, born in New York City, 1888. His father was an actor who played the lead in The Count of Monte Cristo more than 6,000 times. O'Neill accompanied him on the road. Eugene O'Neill said, "As a boy, I saw so much of the old ranting, artificial, romantic stage stuff that I always had a sort of contempt for the theater." And then in 1907, when he was 18, he saw Ibsen's Hedda Gabler in New York. And he said, "I discovered an entire new world of the drama, a modern theater where truth might live." Here's a poem for today by Rudyard Kipling, entitled If. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build 'em up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on, if you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son." Rudyard Kipling's poem, If, on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse, back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North, watch the BBC World News at 7 and Alaska Weather at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, this week's Alaska Marine Highway looks at making connections among people and communities. Alaskan Adventures explores the Inside Passage at 9. And at 10, the Miller Center Forum discusses Lincoln's Code, the laws of war in American history. All tonight on 360 North and 360North.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
Hello, this is Ann Fuller with Juno Afternoon, and we're ready to learn about the Pet Festival. So this is the Gastineau Humane Society, and its anniversary and its annual event. So welcome, Havit. What do you want to tell us about?
Thanks for having us, Ann. So I'm here with our Humane Society vet, Rachel Berngart, and this is an annual event. It's the Pet Festival. And we've got a lot of the same events that we've had in years past. But this year we're going to bring back the hamster ball race. Yeah, you know, these hamsters, if they've been out there working hard, getting ready for the hamster ball race, that's going to start at 11:30. Now, the doors are going to open at 11 so everybody can get their seat and be ready for the big hamster ball race. But if you have a hamster out there and you want that hamster to be in the Pet Festival, give us a call at 7890260 or go to our website at ghspets.org and sign up now. After the hamsters have finished racing, the Capital Kennel Club is going to be on at 12:15, and they are going to show us some events in rally as well as agility. It won't be their full exercise because the place is not actually big enough, but it will give you an idea of what these incredible dogs and their humans can do. Then following that will be a great event we call Musical Chairs that starts at 1:50. And the fun part about that is we're going to actually have live music. Liz Snyder is going to be singing for us. So when she stops singing, the idea is everybody sits down. Then we'll have our ever-popular Leave It Weenie race. Now, we've got a lot of dogs that have competed strenuously for this. They've been eating their way through this since last year, so we hope to see them there. And again, all of these events, we'd like people to sign up in advance, and you can find them on our website. Actually, for the past few years, we've had a fashion show, but this year, Sydney and her soul sisters from Shoefly have revamped this thing. It's called Dogs, Dudes, and Divas. And, if you've ever been into Shoefly, and I'm sure everybody has, you know how great their whole staff is, and that should be very fun. You can find the sign-up sheet also on our website at ghspets.org. You can give us a call at the shelter, and we'll be ready. Now, one of the things, because this is our 50th anniversary, we wanted to do something really spectacular and really fun and really special and really different. And Rachel has been asking me for years, hey, why don't we do a dance? So I said, Rachel, if you want to do it, you can organize it. And she did. And now we've got Woofstock, so I'm going to turn it over to her because it's going to be fun.
Yes, we do have Woofstock. Finally, we have Woofstock. So Woofstock is going to be held at the Jack following Pet Festival. Doors will open at 7:30 p.m., and for only $15, you can have 4 hours of music from local bands. We have Slush Not Snow opening for us at 8 p.m. They're a three-piece band from Juneau. They're kind of an indie rock, pop punk, and everything in between sort of a group. Next we have, at 9 o'clock p.m., we have Susu and the Prophets. Susu and the Prophets is headed up by Shona Strausser, and they're a classic rock band. We also have Fire on McGinnis. They'll be hitting the stage at 10 p.m. Fire on McGinnis is a head-banging, bagpipe-playing live celebration. They've been known to be compared to a Irish pub, except with a hot stove in the corner. And then we're rounding out the night with DNR, which will take the stage at 11 p.m., and DNR is a original contemporary folk music group. We have a beer garden that is sponsored by the Alaska Brewing Company. We'll also have food. We'll have a few other surprises. We've got dancing. We'll have a raffle with door prizes. And all the proceeds will benefit animals in need here in Juneau.
Excellent. Thank you, Rachel. That's the Woofstock, which is Saturday night, which is following the Pet Festival with all kinds of participation by the pets.
Yes.
And this is all happening at the Jack.
This Saturday. Yeah.
One more thing. People are probably going, wow, that sounds fantastic. $15 for 4 hours of music. Where can I get tickets? Tickets are available at GHS, at the Jack, at Hearthside Books, or you can buy them online at ghspets.org or thejack.org. Or if you're a last-minute sort of person, you can also get them at the door.
Thank you. We want to make sure the details are getting out to everybody for celebrating pets and their owners, the people who love them, on this Saturday. It's ghspets.org for the Gastineau Humane Society. And it's been 50 years, hasn't
it? It has been. I mean, 50 years ago, some concerned citizens in Juneau just decided they needed to do something about pets that didn't have a place to live. At that point, the shelter was located in a shed under the old bridge. And I can remember when the shelter was located in a trailer, which was placed on what is now our current shelter property on Glacier Highway. And in the 80s, then the current shelter, in the early 80s, the current shelter was built out there. And really, it couldn't have been done without a lot of help from volunteers and from donors and from people who just cared a lot about the animals that live with us and that we're fortunate enough to have in our lives. If you haven't been to the shelter recently, or even if you have, we hope that you come out and visit us. We have now we have a veterinarian and a clinic at the shelter. We have a full staff. We've got all kinds of things. We have training and we have doggy daycare. And we have a groomer, and we have people who can help you with your behavior problems. Well, your pet behavior problems.
And we have all sorts of fun, busy toys to help your pets with their activity levels and leashes and safety lights, all sorts of good things for the upcoming winter dog walking season.
That's right. And if you want to volunteer, you don't have an animal, or even if you do, we have a volunteer program. We are in the process of revamping that, and it's going to be just fabulous. We're going to have some training sessions, and we hope to have soon, though I don't really want to give a date because they're not quite finished yet, but we hope to soon have a training program for the younger kids so that they will be able to come out and fully participate with animals and have a good experience as well. And if you're looking for a place for interesting birthday party venue, we also have birthday parties. You can come out and spend your birthday with the pets. Mostly those are little kids, but Rachel was there for her birthday with her friends last year, so, you know.
Well, goes with the territory.
Yeah, it goes.
I think so. So we have this wonderful institution that the people of Juneau have created and support, and now a celebration coming up Saturday at the Jack downtown, the Gastineau Humane Society Pet Fest, followed by the first Woofstock.
That's right. And so our doors open at 11.
Mm-hmm.
The Pet Festival goes at 5. Rachel has already informed me that she's going to boot us out so that the sound check people can get in there and set up for Woofstock. The doors for Woofstock open at 7:30, and it goes to midnight, and I think it'll just be a barking good time the whole day, right?
It'll be positively fabulous. One other thing to mention would be that Pet Festival is free.
Yes.
All of that entertainment is free.
That is right.
So Woofstock, it's just $15 for 4 hours of pure musical entertainment, but
that's
Pet
right.
Festival is free.
Absolutely.
And I would just like to thank all of the people who are vendors and sponsors, the bands who are giving their time to do this. Alaska Brewery, they've been awesome. Walmart gave us a nice donation. And everybody has been really generous and really helpful. And we just appreciate it so much.
We couldn't do it without your support.
That's right.
Well, thank you for coming in today to talk about Pet Festival.
Thank you.
K2 Scott Burton caught Harrison B. for a few minutes before his Thursday night show with Alien Ant Farm at Centennial Hall. They spoke about Harrison B.'s music, unique blend of outlaw country, R&B, Motown, hip-hop, his connection with both Nashville and Juneau, and what he's cooking up on his new album.
If I was going to play one song with this interview, one song that you would say is quintessentially you right
sure.
now, that you're most proud of, what would that be? What speaks to you the most right now?
it's probably the same as it's always been, at least for the last year or so. And that's, Freedom Has Stood the Test of Time. It's a song of mine that I didn't plan on it being kind of the one that people really enjoyed. I didn't plan on it being, I guess, what you would call the single or, you know, the one song off the album. But it has been proven as the one that people kind of connect with. And so I think that's the tune that I'm going with.
And a big old helping hand. I see my spot in front of a big old Bobby's band.
Home is Nashville for sure, and it's where I try and rest, and then I tour out of the southeast, you know, and hub out of there. But in a lot of ways, I cut my teeth here before I even cut my teeth there, and here's where I think we're a little bit ahead up here than even we are down there, just because I've spent more time on the ground even here than I did there, particularly in this incarnation, is, you know, playing this Harrison B style of music and that sort of thing. Once we picked a vein, you know, and stuck with it, and I don't know, I've got equal love for both cities, and they are completely different. You know, I can't state that enough, but I think Nashville will always be home, and Juneau will always kind of be a stepmom for me, man. I've got such love for this place, and it's done nothing but been good to me, and that's all I want to do for this city is give back, man. And playing music's the way that I think I can do it right now, so that's what I'm going to do, man. So I just recorded a new album down at Brown's that I've been pre-selling for a long time, and we did it in July. And so this last month that I've been home, I mean, literally every day, it's been all about the mixing and the editing and getting that thing from... We recorded it one track live in an old general store I grew up going to, so we had some 16 or 17 tracks, and each one of those needs to be mixed individually and EQ'd and get to sounding right. And it's like making a soup. You need fresh ingredients, you need them right, and then when you put them in the pot, they all got to taste right together too. And so we're at that final stage now, which is mastering, which is essentially salt and pepper at the very end, you know, just kind of seasoning it up and getting it right. And it's due out November the 18th, so that's coming right up, and it's actually going to be sent out 2 days from now to get the CDs made. So we're at the end of that tunnel, seeing the light, and it feels good.
Well, I appreciate your time. I'll let you get to breakfast.
I appreciate it, Scott. I'm going to the Sandpiper, man.
And here we have Stacy Polson to tell us about what's going on at the Nugget Mall.
Hello. Yeah, we have a lot of Halloween stuff starting this week, actually, on Friday from 5:30 until 7:30. The Thunder Mountain High School drama and music department will be there with a haunted house.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. And Boy Scouts are offering goblin golf, and they'll have bowling and a couple other things in their room. And the Helping Hands will be here with their annual Halloween carnival with games and toys and all sorts of things. It's a really great thing. They have it every year.
All right. And all three of those things start this very week?
On Friday.
On
yeah,
Friday.
5:30
okay.
to 7:30. So this weekend it will be Friday and Saturday. Saturday's times will be noon to 4. And then next week, Friday, will be 5:30 to 7:30, Saturday, noon to 4, and Sunday, 1 to 4. And then on Halloween itself, all three of those groups will be back. They'll be there from 5 to 7:30, and we will have the annual trick-or-treating at the mall, which is a great thing for kids. They can get out of the weather. It's lit. It's safe. It's a wonderful event, and that goes from 5:30 until 7. And our annual costume contest will start at 5 p.m.
Excellent. So the Nugget Mall has several days of Halloween going on, but starting this Friday with Haunted House, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this weekend also we are starting our first Saturday market at the mall. We're going to have these every third Saturday of the month. And it's arts, crafts, antiques, collectors items, and farmer market type things, fresh produce and preserved items as well. And that's going to be Saturday the 19th from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. And then we have our holiday markets coming up starting in November, and we have sign-ups available for those with spaces available starting at as low as $15.
Thank you for those details. So we've got Halloween, but then this farmer's market. So these would be local people who come in, and they're in the main part of the mall with the tables?
Yeah, they'll be through the hallway. And it's people throughout the southeast. We get people from Haines and Ketchikan and Sitka that join us.
All right. Well, it certainly sounds like the Nugget Mall has a lot going on for us. Now, we ran through those dates and times pretty quickly. The Nugget Mall has a hotline up where a telephone number is 789-9014, where you can call and get the details.
Yeah, and that's up to date so far. We also have our website.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuggetmalljuno.com, and you would need to go to the events link to get to our event hotline.
So there's a calendar there.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like these are wonderful places for folks to come and have some exciting things going on, especially the extended Halloween events.
Yeah, it's always fun at the mall during Halloween. We have the whole mall decorated for you, and we have lots of kids show up because it's a great environment. They can show off their costumes, and they don't have to be covered with a raincoat.
Well, yes, Stacy. So thank you for telling us about what's going on at the Nugget Mall.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is Bird Note. Weather radar is now so sensitive, it can track the migration of birds. Cliff Mass, professor of atmospheric sciences at the University of Washington, describes the radar images from a massive migration through the Puget Sound region.
So I have a series of images on my blog. The first one is 8:57 p.m. This is on May 14th. And this is very close to sunset. And there isn't too much echo out there. But then it's starting to get dark. And the next image is at 9:36 p.m. And all of a sudden, we start seeing the whole region filling up with echo. Some of it's getting pretty intense. And then it just extends further and further as we go just a little further in time. At 11:04 p.m., I mean, virtually the whole domain is full of these echoes. And these are all birds flying. We can look at something in the middle of the night or even in the morning, you know, right before sunrise, and you know, there's still a lot of echoes, but as soon as sunrise occurs, and on this day, sunrise was at 5:32, we started seeing the echoes disappearing. And by the time you get to 7, 8 o'clock, they're virtually gone. It's just an amazing diurnal variation echoes that we see during the spring migration and also during the fall. But now the National Weather Service has a wonderful network around the country. It's called NEXRAD, Next Generation Radar. And these are extraordinarily fine, high-powered radars. And so you can get this view over the whole nation.
Millions of birds are on the move. See the images for yourself at Cliff Mass's blog when you begin at birdnote.org.
Hello, this is Ann Fuller with Juno Afternoon. And right now I've got Mary Lou Spartz in the studio, and she's going to be telling us about a production that she's called a Reader's Theater production, the real story of the sinking of the Princess Sophia. Hello, Mary Lou.
Hi, Anne. Nice to see you.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here, and I want to know all kinds of things about what you're going to be doing at the State Museum on Saturday.
Well, at Saturday at 2 o'clock, we're going to be doing a Reader's Theater. People have asked me, are you giving a speech, Mary Lou? And I'm saying, no. This is a cast, and we're going to be producing a short piece on taken from the event of the sinking of the Princess Sophia. And I certainly invite everyone to come. It's free. It's short. The piece itself runs about maybe half an hour, and then maybe a little longer, depending on how my actors work it out. But I think it's a piece that's based pretty much on mythology. That is to say, the myth of the stories that go around after such a terrible tragedy as that was.
I see.
Tragic event, I should say.
It a tragedy, and then people want to tell stories about it, and they keep thinking about what happened and trying to explain it, maybe?
We always like to have some kind of explanation. Mm-hmm. We can't really believe that such a terrible thing could happen, and we have no answers. We do have answers here and there, bits and pieces, but these are taken from court records and from books that are researched and from books that are just kind of casually addressed to the event. And so it all gets, over the years, gets very mixed up. And this is the 95th year of commemorating the sinking.
Mm-hmm.
So we have until 2018, when we will be celebrating the 100th commemoration of the sinking.
Yes, and for those people who don't know,
mm-hmm.
This is a ship that sank right near here in Juneau, correct?
Yes, she sank on Vanderbilt Reef in Lynn Canal it's about 40 to 50 miles north of here. She was coming down from Skagway in a tremendous storm on October. She left Skagway on October 23rd, and in the morning of the 24th, she struck Vanderbilt Reef and got hung up there. And the story talks about that event and then what happened after that. And, of course, we always speculate as to why, because she didn't sink until the morning of the 26th, mm-hmm. when she broke off after the wheelhouse. So you've probably seen that famous picture, that famous photograph.
Yes, I think it's certainly been printed. I believe it's actually on display in a couple of places around town still.
Well, Dan Fruits has done a series of pieces. He's done some very interesting prints.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, of course, is an artist. Graphic artist. And he's done a very admirable job of taking photographs that I believe were taken by Percy Pond of Winter and Pond. And Percy Pond was out there bouncing around on a small boat taking pictures. So all of the pictures that were taken, the original photographs, were very blurry.
Well, yes.
But you can understand, yes.
Yes. And so it sounds to me, as you tell me this, you've done some research about this story over the years.
I have. I have been, there are obsessions and then there are obsessions. And this is sort of mine.
Following the shipwreck story and what happened. So then, having done been obsessed with it and learned about it, am I to understand you're the writer and the director of this
piece? I am.
I've
put this together. For a couple of reasons. One of them is because of the definitive work in print on this subject is a book called The Sinking of the Princess Sophia, Taking the North Down With Her by Ken Coates and Bill Morrison. And Bill Morrison will be here on the 18th at the evening at Egan, and I'm so excited that he's coming. Because I'm a big fan of the book, and it's just going to be wonderful. I'm really delighted that finally I get to see the people in their real self. And I'm hoping everyone that wants to know about the ship will attend that.
Well, it does sound, his speech on Friday night is dedicated to this. And then on Saturday afternoon, mm-hmm. your take on it, which is perhaps more literary than an actual historical delineation.
Yes, it is. It's not. We're not going to go into a long rambling dissertation at all. It's just a piece that does include a number of things that we do know, but it really just is focused on the dramatic aspect of it, which means it's storytelling in that sense, and all this. All stories are real. That's
yes.
why this is the real story.
And this is a real story.
Yeah.
How many people are in your company for this?
Well, we have 8 characters.
Okay.
And so we'll be enjoying a wonderful cast. I'm just humbled by their willingness to do this.
Well, it sounds like quite a project. How long do you think you've been working on it?
Off and on, 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yes.
But you know how those things go, Ann. You're a writer. You know that you put it down and pick it up, put it down and pick it up.
You do. That's true. And once you get an idea, it's worth thinking about exactly how you want to present it. And this is going to be a presentation as Reader's Theater. It'll be upstairs in the State Museum, which means if you want to see some details about it, you can go to museums.alaska.gov. Mm-hmm. And they put out a press release earlier this month explaining that there will be a Saturday presentation of this with Mary Lou Spartz.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said the Alaska State Museum downtown at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And
free.
It's free. Mm-hmm. It's a short presentation of the stories and what people have thought about what happened, mm-hmm. All those 95 years ago, and why we have photographs of it and grave markers in our cemetery.
Yes.
Many stories.
It's suitable for children, but older children. Mm-hmm. The younger children, I think, it isn't active, so
right.
it wouldn't be anything. And, of course, the story itself is very sobering. So I would think it would be more appealing to youngsters in their last part of elementary and on up.
All right. Thank you for clarifying that. So those are the details about a Reader's Theater production of the real story of the sinking of the Princess Sophia. Well, thank you, Mary Lou Spartz, for coming in.
Thank you, Ann Fuller, for having me.
I will love you forever, my darling, my lover, Mrs. Harper, my wife. And the north wind is starting to blow in. Hold tightly, my darling, hold. Princess, the fire abounds.
Douglas Little Theater presents the 24-Hour Miracle Theater Challenge, October 18th and 19th, upstairs at Rockwell. Four writers, four directors, four teams of actors with 12 hours to write and 12 hours to stage a play, making for one exciting night of theater. Clock starts running 8 p.m. on the 18th and ends with a curtain rising 8 p.m. on the 19th. Up for the challenge? JDLT is looking for actors and stage crew. Or come for the performance 8 p.m. on October 19th. Tickets at the door. Information at jdlittletheater.org or the JDLT Facebook page.
Weather tonight, increasing low clouds. Thursday will be partly cloudy with areas of fog in the morning. Thursday night, patchy fog late. And Friday, cloudy, patchy fog, chance of rain. And by Friday night, the rain comes in. Tomorrow on Juno afternoon, Thursday, 3 o'clock, Shona Strasser will host. We'll get the details about this Saturday's 24-hour miracle. Bill Merck will be here to highlight this Friday's Grand Poetry Slam. We'll talk with members of the Juno String Ensemble about their recent travels to China. Nancy DeTerney will be here with Arts Up. All of those people, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, Thursday at 3 on K2 News. If you miss a Juno afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it and other local, statewide, national, and international news on the web, ktoo.org. KTOO FM. This is K2 in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, K2 is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at k2.org. Support for national programming on K2 comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. This is Ann Fuller, and this has been Juno Afternoon.